You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with a man I admire greatly, a courageous Muslim in Canada by the name of Tariq Fatah. He is a columnist for the Toronto Sun, the author of two very important books, Chasing a Mirage, The Tragic Illusion of an Islamic State, and The Jew is Not My Enemy. He is a founder of the Muslim Canadian Congress. And speaking of The Jew is Not My Enemy, it would certainly appear that for the jihadists in France at the moment, and indeed in other places in Europe, the Jew is very much their enemy. Talk, if you would, a little bit, Tariq, about the attack on the synagogue specifically in recent days, but also what it suggests about the nature of this anti-Semitic doctrine of Sharia.
You see, the problem in a Muslim theology or history is that it depends on what text you're looking at. Now, the basic Muslim anti-Semitic streak comes from the validation of killing Jews in a story of how the biography of the Prophet, which is called the Sirah of Prophet Muhammad, written about 200 years after his death, where there is a detailed description of how Prophet Muhammad surrounded a Jewish fort that had been neutral in a war that he had with his Meccan pagans. And in that story, the Prophet is supposed to have slaughtered 700 Jewish men and young men, and boys were sold as slaves, as were the women. Now, that gave validation to almost the last 1,000 years of Jewish anti-Semitism, where the Jew was considered to be untrustworthy, evil.
Sons of apes and pigs, I think, is the exact term that is often used.
That, too, it comes from the Hadith, not the Quran. So within segments of our society, the anti-Semitism is deeply rooted.
Indeed. We're visiting with Tariq Fatah of Canada. He is a columnist for the Toronto Sun and a founder of the Muslim Canadian Congress. And I apologize for interrupting you, but you were just making the point, Tariq, that there is considerable sort of basis for this anti-Semitic strain in certain Islamic practice. Talk a bit about what it has translated into in the modern era.
You have to look at it that within Indian Muslim society, the Jew was not considered to be the enemy. The Jew was considered by Muslims in India to be the wise people, curious, monotheists, and in fact allies. Similar was the case in Iran and to a large extent Turkey, that became home to the Muslim, to the Jewish community that was expelled after the Inquisitions from Spain. So there is a mixed message within Islamic circles. On the other hand, those who follow the Sharia and the Sirah, the biography of Prophet Muhammad through which it is interpreted, and the quotations of Muhammad are also justified, if they are being pious Muslims, to be anti-Jew. You cannot be considered religiously pious and following the example of Prophet Muhammad if you don't accept the fact that it is alleged Muhammad said the Jews are sons of pigs and swines. So we have a mixed bag in which many practicing Muslims in the last century said, well, Islam is basically a way to, how shall I put it, to clear your neighbor's snow after a snowstorm. But the ideology that comes from the Muslim Brotherhood, which is Islamism, has used these texts to formulate a very anti-Israel hatred, which conceals the hatred of the Jew. And so it's complicated. And what happens is there are very few people in the West that understand the complexity or how to deal with this. For example, how did Turkey, that was such a close ally of Israel, within a matter of 10 years has become one of the most anti-Semitic places that exist in the Islamic world.
Yes. And again, this is in part, as you've pointed out now several times, Tariq, a function of the preeminence, the doctrine, well, influence, I guess is the correct word for it, of the Muslim Brotherhood within modern Muslim societies and circles, particularly in the West. And to the extent that that is so, characterize, if you would, the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and the majority of Muslims in countries like Canada, for that matter, or for the United States. Is it widely subscribed to, or is it really kind of an outrider but that exercises disproportionate influence?
Well, Frank, the problem is that most Muslims that I know have neither read the Quran, nor the Sharia, nor the biography, nor the Hadith. Most Muslims, for example, in France itself, they say about 60% of the Muslims have never been to a mosque. I know that if all the Muslims in Toronto, which are 500,000, were put together on Good Friday and asked to go to the mosque, there would be no place for them, because if every mosque was packed, there would be room for just 50,000, which means vast majority of the Muslims are not knowledgeable about their own faith, which leaves the religion in the hand of the obscure men from the Arab world who descend and take over these mosques. And because they speak fluent Arabic and wear medieval clothes, they're looked upon as the spokespersons for Islam. And then the government caters to them. So when you have events in the White House where President Obama is meeting with leaders of the Muslim community, who do you see there? Islamists.
You bet. Muslim brothers, to put a fine point on it, by and large.
And 90% of those people are, like Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, associated in one way or the other with the Muslim Brotherhood.
That would be Huma Abedin, of course, his deputy chief of staff, right? And Tariq Fattah, this really raises a very profound question. You've indicated that most Muslims are not very familiar with their faith. They're not attending the mosques. And I guess that's a good thing, given the nature of what's being done with many of these mosques, particularly under the influence of something called the North American Islamic Trust. Talk a little bit about that organization and the role that it's playing, I think, on both sides of our border.
Well, here's how the typical Muslim community grows in a small town, say about 10, 15 families. I can talk about my own family, both in the U.S. and in Canada. They come together, and they need a place where they can meet, whether it is to have shisha, whether it is to just gossip, or just talk, shoot the breeze, as they say. And in between comes up effort by people to bring up a mosque, which would be a place for prayer, but that takes just about 10% out of the 24 hours. The rest of the time is for weddings and birthdays and people coming and going. However, within 5 years, on an average, there is fatigue in not being able to pay the mortgage. There steps in these financial companies based out of Saudi Arabia but registered in the United States, who take over the real estate and salvage the mosque and then control it. Once they are in control of that real estate, they bring in the imam of their ideology, who, because he speaks fluent Arabic, is suddenly seen by the largely Indian, Pakistani, or a black or white Muslim to be as the authentic Muslim. And within a week or two, you will start the fact that every Friday congregation starts with a prayer to God to bring defeat on non-Muslims at the hands of Muslims.
Tariq, hold this thought. Yeah, this is the point. And I want to visit with you further about what it means for Muslims like yourself who don't buy that, who don't want to go there. That and more with Tariq Fattah, a columnist with the Toronto Sun. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.